This episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. I love cooking with Red Boat because it's made with only two ingredients, wild-caught anchovies and sea salt. This premium fish sauce is made in Phu Quoc, Vietnam and bottled right here in California. You can find Red Boat at select Asian supermarkets like 99 Ranch, H Mart, and Tong Phac.
My name is Ted. I'm this year's current co-executive director of Memo.
I'm Timothy Bowie. I'm involved with Memo since 2012 as a chief executive advisor.
Welcome to The Vietnamese. I'm your host, Kenneth Nguyen. Being part of a culture of nearly 100 million Vietnamese people in the world today comes with a lot of pain, proud history, and privilege. Join me as I highlight and explore the Vietnamese experience from all of. Thank you both for coming on the podcast. How did you both get involved in Memo?
My involvement started in 2019. I was just looking for any service opportunities. I'm a very hands-on person, especially giving back to my community. And Memo has offered me the opportunity to bake or make these homemade meals for families that are long stay in the hospital. And that's kind of my first service event with Memo. But aside from that, I saw all of the variety of things that Memo does offer, especially addressing the needs of the underserved communities here in Southern California, as well as abroad to Vietnam. So those two aspects kind of sparked my passion for helping others, especially here. And coming from a Vietnamese or like a person with a Vietnamese immigrant background, I feel like it also sparked to what I want to do in as well as like my passion in life. So that is when I got a little bit more acquainted to Memo. And then for next year, for like 2020, I applied to be service intern, and I was also service chair and leading my way up. Last year, I was the external relations coordinator for board of directors, and now this year, I'm Memo's co-executive director. So I do have a little bit of history with all of the service events for Memo, but I did decide to stay just because all of the programs and the missions we have to offer.
For me, Ken, I approached back in 2012. I'm looking for an organization that I would like to rely on, and I want to give back to the community. What other better way than just go back to your roots, right? Like Vietnam. So I tumbled to this organization, Memo. At that time, it was run by two siblings, which is what they are a UCI undergrad, and they became a physician now. And also, I work very closely with their parents. The dad is a surgeon, vascular surgeon, and the mom is a PhD of the infectious disease. And they, the one that behind the scene, will guide them to the mission trip, the logistic, all that kind of stuff. So when I approach as a dentist, I'm saying that how come you guys don't have a dental program? Because there's so much need. When I go to different organizations in the past, before 2012, they always have a dental program. We do a free extraction and free fillings. And at that time, Dr. Zui, he's saying that, well, if you're passionate about it, why don't you create the program? So that's what I did. I created the program since 2012. And then since that point on, the dental programs originated. So every medical mission, we have a dental program as well.
Got it.
That's how I start. Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand the landscape of these sort of medical missions. There's a few of them in Southern California and across the country, correct?
Yes, there's a lot, right?
There's mm-hmm. a lot. And I had always thought that our Vietnamese community was not really into volunteering, not really into, you know, giving back to the community. And then I think that's a natural thing in the early years. We're all just trying to survive. But here we are. And I am so thrilled to have found out in the last few years that there's not just one Memo, but there's many organizations like Memo. And I think what I want to know is, how do you sort of dictate where to go, who to serve, what demographics to really reach out to?
Originally, we have, first of all, let me answer the difference between our memorization compared to the rest. This is the only student-run organization, okay? Only student-run. So, and I'm proud to say that that's what I would like to include too. She's a leader, or director, and she's been in the memorization for a few years now, different posts. So we, as advisor, we just guide them behind the scene. And the whole idea, a lot of different mission trip, like a Project Vietnam, SAP Vietnam, they run by a physician or dentist, a professional, and the student is actually tagged along. Memo student, memo organization is completely different. Memo is the student is actually organizing. Okay, and then they put a lot of and there's a lot of logistic that they need to talk to the Vietnamese people. That's what I come in. Okay, now to answer your question about how we have a scouter that in Vietnam that able to tell us what region that they needed. A lot of remote area in Vietnam, like Guangxi, Sichuan, and actually it's on Google too, that they have a high population, condensed population in poverty. We also, Vietnam, we have more than 22 millions in poverty. And those, so we want to target those region. So every year we try to go to different region to serve. So that's what we got the information from, okay,
Got it.
from a local official.
There seems to be a lot of moving parts, and this question's for two. There's a lot of moving parts, and I'm blown away to hear that it's ran by students. How is this possible with such a busy schedule, with such a busy life? And I'm sure that your education is not stopped at the undergrad level because you want to be a pharmacist. So how do you find the time, and how does other students find the time to really lock everything in?
I think to answer your question, there are a variety of factors for students. I guess the first thing I do remember when I first transitioned into my role is that the previous memo successors, they will transition and kind of train you for any of the responsibilities and duties first, and they will guide you through that whole quarter just so that they can leave a memo in good hands for the next years. So we are kind of trained and prepped to do our duties. But I think second of all, what Memo does really well, in my opinion, is that we are a group of students from different universities throughout Southern California. So we have students from UCI, UCSD, USC, and UCLA. We're a bit of a like-minded community in the sense that we're very school and community driven. But at least I know for the local UCSD chapter, we also host kind of social and like study events. So we can plan memo on certain days, but also reserve other days where we hang around, study together, and focus on school. So I do think that I guess for the logistic wise, there is a lot to plan, but as well, our students kind of know how much rigor it takes to be a memo officer. We set the layout for the groundwork of how much time that they do need to dedicate. And we often have check-in meetings with our students to check on the progress and timeline of their events. So they can let us know if they need more help with that, we can try to step in. And on the board of director level, we are actually all alumni and Memo graduates. So we do have a little bit more free time in addition to our work to kind of look over these branches and communicate between all of the moving factors.
And
But
how many students are involved, or how many personnel do you have at the student level? Not at the Dr. Bui level, but at the student level.
I would say at right now we have about 200 active members across all four universities.
This episode is brought to you by Songkhai Distillery, my only go-to gin company. Established in 2018, Songkhai Distillery is Vietnam's first gin distillery, founded by Daniel Nguyen, a Vietnamese American from Southern California. No matter how many people I have at my parties, we are always pouring Songkhai gin. Sung Kai Gin is handcrafted in small batches and prioritizes using botanicals and ingredients that are native and heirloom to Vietnam. The result is a product uniquely Vietnamese in taste and aroma. Sung Kai is now growing to include rice wine and traditional Vietnamese herbal liqueurs similar to Amaro. Sung Kai prides itself in Vietnam, from the farmers who grow the fruits and herbs to the artists behind the artwork and design. Sung Kai is a community effort of people who are proud to be Vietnamese and collectively embody the spirit of Vietnam. That is quite a bit of members. And Timothy, I want to ask, we'll jump a little bit across the ocean to Vietnam. And I can only imagine the red tape that you have to deal with when you're organizing these missions. Could you talk about that process of how do you work with the government? Because I mean, I think there's a level of pride or whatever coming from the Vietnamese side saying, well, why would we need help from the outside, right? You know, we're a country that can do how probably can stand right. on their own, right? So
right.
my question is, how does that affect the mechanics of what you all do?
Okay, very good question. A lot of different organization, they ask me the same way, same type of question. First of all, I'm proud to say for the last, since 2007 until now, we never have to do any bribery, number one. And this is a situation when they ask for it and we refuse, we go to different locations. So we also have a plan B. Because I don't think it's right. But the way that we avoid the red tape, because we work very closely to a main teaching hospital in Saigon, is that they call it University Medical Center or Nha Thuong Đại học Y Dược, and Trên Đường Hồng Bàng, tức là is the only teaching hospital in Saigon, and Dr. Zui is the one that got invited annually to teach, because he's a vascular surgeon, so to train the surgeon over there. That's how they have that relationship started. So on the dental side, since I'm there, I get a chance to work with the dental school in the past, not anymore. That every time I go there, I exchange some ideas. They love to talk about, because I'm in cosmetic dentistry, so I want to talk about that. Any topic they want to hear, so we exchange ideas. So because of that relationship, so and the head of the hospital is like that's part of the government. So everywhere, so the way that we do it, they have a curriculum for medical student and dental student that they have to go every year to remote area to do free service. That's part of the curriculum. So we take along with them. We work together, we collaborate with them. So that's why that we never have problem with red tape, because the hospital is the one leading it and they get all the permit from them.
Now, you've been going back to Vietnam quite a bit. I want to hear both of your thoughts on the first time each one of you arrived in Vietnam for the actual memo mission.
I think my first time was last year. That was my first memo mission since we didn't have any mission trips since the pandemic. So 2023 was the first year memo was able to kind of reinstate our memo mission trip program. The first time that I left the airport, and since I grew up in Vietnam and I immigrated here when I was six, it felt a lot of familiarity, but at the same time, a little bit different. This is the first time I went back, not to specifically have the purpose of seeing family or for a special event such as a wedding or a funeral, but to give back to the communities that we've been working so hard during the whole year to work, to donate and then work for all of our clinics, all of the scholarships and all of the orphanage donations. So it was quite a different experience where my purpose for returning back was a little bit different than before. But throughout the mission trip, I was quite honestly exhausted, but honestly, it was very exciting to see and witness and interact with all of the people you meet during our clinic days, as well as meeting the children we are giving our scholarships to and their parents. They are very appreciative of that. And the orphanage as well. I remember last year we were just playing soccer on the fields at the orphanage. So it really gave me a lot of, I guess it was a little bit heartwarming to see where all of the efforts of Memo students throughout the whole year, what we've been fundraising for, what we've been volunteering for the whole year, to see that all come into fruition and to see that in person, it was very inspiring. I can pass it on to Dr. Bui.
Ken, the one re I mean one thing that keep me going because of the student the I mean it's hard work. I mean a lot of sacrifice on my family side. And I have two offers. I have 2 daughters to work. I just finished as well the wedding. So it's a lot of things going on my side, on my personal side as well. But what is really keep me going, I remember I did it for 8 times now, so back to Vietnam. The first time I came back, a lot of people don't realize this. Human being are the same, either they are Vietnamese or Americans or Africans. There's a lot of people that have a good heart. And every time I come back, I start networking. So I have a team of local physicians that I really to become friends of. And they have the same mission, like they have a same vision like I do. So every time I come back to Vietnam, I kind of associate with them on the dental side especially. Okay, on the other side, on the medical side, we hook up together with the hospital, and they a lot of doctors here, like the cardiologist that actually he's a thoracic surgeon, he's a cardiology a thoracic surgeon, and he's leading the mission trip now. And after I talked to him, after he have a genuine good heart. So a lot of people they don't understand, they still have a misconception that why are you helping people over there? Let the government deal with them. The more you're doing it, they take advantage of you. I don't see that as a take advantage. They don't take advantage of us. Matter of fact, we would, because the government, there's so much poverty in Vietnam that the government cannot help all, and they just help a few. So for us, even though I do once a year, it's like a drop in the bucket. But because I start networking, and guess what? When I come back, they go on with the third, the fourth. So a lot of organizations now, they do it 4 or 5 times a year. Free dentistry, you know, same thing with the free medical service for the remote area. So I think that what we did back in 2012, 2007, we raise the awareness. Hey, we, you know, we coming far away from the United States, and we try to help out the poor people. Why not you guys? You guys are local. So I think they get it, they got it. So that's why that I think that every time I come back, we work as a team, we collaborate with each other. So to me, that's very satisfying. So I feel very complete. I've been doing dentistry for 37 years now, but I telling my kids that by doing what I'm doing, I feel my life is more complete and more meaningful. Now, in terms of student, you know, my kids is not they think that everybody live like in Newport Beach. No, unfortunately, the people live like where we. So I took all my 2 daughters over there, and then they start appreciate life a little bit better. They fighting with the new iPhone instead over there we have one iPhone for the whole village to share. So and then one bathroom for 3 family to share instead of complaining about why do I have to share with my sister. So it's those kind of thing that I think that so and then I take them to the orphanage. That's the time that they build up the compassion and then ethics and compassion. Unfortunately, all the universities in California or United States, they teach they very they give you education, but they don't teach compassion. They don't teach ethics. So that's the only way that you learn those when you go to a mission trip. So I think that people, the kid, the student that go through the mission trip, they learn all that stuff. And then the parents see that, and the parents even call me and thank me. So I feel very satisfying. So that's the feeling I got from the beginning until now.
Now, when I read up about your organization, there seems to be very different missions. There's the one to Vietnam. There's making kits here in at USC, it seems like. There's different volunteering things. A lot of moving parts. How is that all organized? That it just seems so seamless from, from reading about, but it sounds like a lot of work in terms of managing different departments. How is this done?
So I guess before to I want to address this question, I just want to let you know that MAMO's mission statement is to address the medical and educational needs of underserved communities, whether it be locally here in Southern California, where we do a lot of our volunteering work, or abroad in Vietnam. So we do have that local philanthropy component as well as an abroad focus in Vietnam. So I guess just to answer your questions, a lot of the board of directors, our nonprofit, we focus on the big three events, and they're mainly catered towards our mission programs. So our first one is our OC Health Fair in Orange County, where we collaborate with the Vietnamese Physicians Association of Southern California to host a free health fair for anyone who is needed to see that doctor's consultation and get free dental examination and treatment that they need, as well as our gala, so we can fundraise for all of our programs on the mission trip. So going a little bit into our mission programs, we currently have five, and that is our heart, our medical program, our dental, and our scholarship program, and then lastly, our HOPE program, which is for the orphanages. And how we kind of delegate this is we are our structural organization at the top level. We have the board of directors, so our graduate alumni. We work together closely with all of our advisors for our big nonprofit events. But underneath that, our board of directors kind of supervise the chapter levels. So that includes any chapter officers from UCSD, UCI, USC, and UCLA. Those officers have the duty of carrying out the fundraising events, the sponsorship events, all of the service and workshop and outreach events at their local chapter. And then beneath them, they also have internships. So they each have interns that will help them kind of carry out this program and kind of train them into the role. So we do have these three structures for our students, but every month, and we also communicate with each other through our meetings. So we kind of relay information. This is what our chapter is doing here in Irvine. This is what our chapter here is doing in San Diego. And we all give each other feedback and just what went well during this event, what didn't went well. So we can all take that into consideration and kind of build on our events in the future. And then I can pass it on to Dr. Wu to talk a little bit more about the providers side.
Before I didn't have a lot of providers, a lot of help. So I used to work together with the parents of the sibling that who originated the club back in 2007. Unfortunately, both passed. Dr. Zui passed away from COVID in Fun Valley, and then he, their mom passed away from cancer. So I've been, and then this is almost like 5 years now, 5, 6 years. So I've been holding the torch during that time. But and then I'm lucky enough that I recruit more advisors. At this time, we have a two. Let me see. We have 1, 2, 3 dentist advisors. We have 2 doctors advisors. And then actually, is that four? Four dentists, right? 4 dentists. We are including me.
I believe
Four.
it's five, And then
Or,
two.
so basically, three. Oh, you include Dr. Jenny Lee. Okay, so that's five dentists that actually are as advisors, and then we have two physicians also as advisors, and then my wife play a small part of it as well. So now the program keep expanding, so that's why we need more help. Now, to answer your question, like in a nutshell, is this the we have four different chapters, and different chapters they have the board, their own board, and they supervise by the board directors, like who is the leader on the board director. And basically, they handling all the local chapter activities, including local health fair. But when we talk about the mission trip or OC health fair, that's on the board director level with the advisor level. So that's how we differentiate. So in other words, a student for student who not able to go to the mission trip, at least they have some other activities that can participate as well.
It's extensive. It sounds like the military almost.
Yeah, it's
Well,
that's why
organized.
that Ken, I would love you to be there for, I don't know if you are available on the April the 21st, which is our fundraising gala. We go down to each, and then once you go through the gala, we explain with the with the pictures on the screen, so you can understand more. Right now, it's too much to digest at this point.
Yeah. This is obviously research that I've already done, but for the audience, this is what it's for, is to kind of break down and hear the sort of leadership describe the organization in a way that's digestible. But I kind of, did my research and,
Okay, great.
yeah, but this is not this podcast is not solely for me. This is, for the audience to kind of learn about the
Oh, I
organization.
see.
Thank you for sharing that, because yeah, I do understand the intricacy of it, and it sounds like a lot of details. I want to ask about the involvement with Vietnam as it relates to parents of students in the United States, the Vietnamese American community. How does students' parents feel about, their kids going back to Vietnam, that, a lot of the people here are not fully healed from the traumas of the past? Is that an issue that you both have to contend with?
Let me answer that quickly. First of all, I'm proud to say, member organization, we don't involve any politics and religion. Those are two things that we don't even discuss. So having been said that, for us, wherever there's need help, we go there to serve. Very simple. I mean, and I think the parents, where they get so impressed when they go through the gala, they understand where we're coming from. So we just go wherever is need help. They have some government help, but it's not enough. So everybody chip in, everybody give a hands on to help. So far I don't have any I don't have any issue. I so far I don't have any issue of people, even my brother-in-law, Anh Nam Lộc, right? Back then, people think that, oh my God, he was banned from Vietnam because he's really go for human rights. He's really, so he's against the Communist Party, this and that. So, but yet, his daughter, that I mentor, also a memo student, graduate from Brown University, went to UCSF Dental School, and then that, and she came to the mission trip with us as a dentist and also as a student. So he believe in it. So I think that you're gonna see Anh Nam Lộc there too. So I think that in general, as long as you put the politics aside, I think that's our goal, basically. So to go into the area, And unfortunately, there's some people they feel strongly about Vietnam, then not much you can do, you know. So, but I don't see that as the problem, because every year we have 500 to 600 people show up in the gala.
Wow.
Yeah, so a lot of people are surprised. They're saying that, wow, you have that much. So that proved to you that if they believe in the cause, then you don't have that type of,
Yeah,
you know.
at the end of the day, the cause and doing good should always trump politics. It should always
Yes.
trump division. And I believe
Right.
that. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear that. I just want to see if there's any sentiments from parents,
But
if
that's a very good question, though. And I have some question from even the parents call me up before they let their
Yeah.
kids to be part of the memo. They ask, they interrogate me. They're saying that, well, do you what kind? And then I tell them straight. I saying that, you know, we don't involve politics. We just go to the area where's need help, and that's it. And the thing is, we want to build up. We want to teach student leadership, compassion, ethics, and then you know. So a lot of time when they understand me, and then they okay with that.
Speaking from the student point of view, I haven't had received that either. I've actually gone the opposite when parents come to at least one of our advisors or one of our board of directors and ask why they aren't accepted onto the mission trip, not if why is my kid going. So we've actually had the opposite when people were kind of competing for these spots. But for me, my parents, especially my mom, when she first heard about this organization, she was very thrilled to see that I am kind of connecting back to my culture and helping my community, especially my Vietnamese community as well. I think my generation, some of us can be so disconnected, especially if you're kind of like second gen American. I think there's the lack of like language barrier between your parents and your community as well. So I do think that a lot of the Vietnamese students, when they find Memo, they can also kind of rekindle that love for their Vietnamese community and see where our hard work is going towards. But especially when we are talking to our parents, since they do know that we have so many late night meetings, so many times we're missing out on family functions to go to like service events, right? Some of our weekends are always packed for Memo. But when they see our gala and when we go to our mission trip, they can see, oh, that is where my kids' passion for others lie. This is all of their contributions coming together in one place. So I think that they see it kind of as the fruition of all of the collective student efforts, and they see that it is our passion for these mission trips. I don't think they see it as anything else. But that is a little bit from my family.
Yeah, it's good to hear that. Now, what about the vetting process to get students? I mean, you can't just take anybody, right? I'm sure there's probably applicants, and what if it's not a good fit, or what if they're just not, on the right track academically? Like, how does this vetting process work?
Yeah, from the student side of the vetting process, we actually have kind of stages. So the first stage is applications. They have to fill out this written application of why they want to go on the mission trip. What are their goals? What is the purpose? So we can kind of assess them and their character for a bit. And we only have a limited spots we can allocate to interviews between all four of the chapters. So for this year, we only took 12 applicants from each chapter to interview. So
Wow.
after the acceptances are sent out, we have in-person interviews. We have, I think, a full day of itinerary of mini, I think they're called MMI style questions, like for a medical school, where we have these mini scenario questions to kind of assess their character and how they would react in certain situations. Especially in a foreign country in Vietnam, this might be the first time they're traveling. We do not know how they will react to certain cues or certain urgent events. So we would like to assess kind of their character as well as their reaction and kind of their proactiveness. And after the interviews are over, all of our board of directors and officers come together and we deliberate on the scores and the notes for each applicant. So in those individual stations, we take down scores and we tally them up and kind of discuss on which applicant we see is best fit to go on the mission trip, whether it be their character, whether it's what something that they said stood out to us. And then after that, we have sent out acceptances, but throughout the along the way, we also have multiple training, and then we also assess their activeness and participation throughout from when their acceptance is until they go on the mission trip. So they still have to volunteer at these specific events. They still have to hit a number of events for socials, for service events, for fundraising. They have to help us with our sponsorship. A lot of our volunteers at Gala, you will see, will be our mission trip goers on the 15G mission trip. So you will see a little something special from them as well if you're able to attend. But we would like to just keep the atmosphere and their motivation going towards the mission trip. After they apply, we tell them again, honestly, over and over again as a reminder, like, we are assessing their activeness and participation as well as dedication for memo. If this isn't a fit for them somewhere along the way, they can let us know, or they can just keep doing what they're doing and act as really good role models for the future generations of memo as well.
The process is very rigorous. So like she mentioned, we have more, since space is limited, because since the student run, so we divide the teams. So each leader that already have experience of the mission trip, they supervise three or four in the group. So by doing that, they all protected, okay? And we have curfew, we have a protocol to follow, all that kind of stuff. So, and then because of the way that we're screening, the people that go on mission trip, they like top of the queen. They like the I mean, they very team players. So that's why a lot of Project Vietnam, I did a collaboration with the Project Vietnam with the TQNQ, TQNQ. And the way that they set up the in Vien Hope or South Vietnam, everybody want to join, just application and they in. Okay, but for us, it's like it's a lot of process you have to go through. So that's why she always tell me why that. I don't know how you guys do it, but you as member student, they work as a team because we pre-select already. So that's and then. We don't want to pick those students for the wrong reason because a lot of people they just want to go mission trip because they need to put something on the resume to apply, right? But they don't have any team play. They're not team players or they don't have so those kind of stuff that we try to rule out. Okay, so.
Where do you think this sort of system of vetting and this level of professionalism came from?
Okay,
Did you guys pull it after something?
I'm glad that you asked that because I'm leading to that. It's originally 2007, right? So from the two siblings with the parents, they lay out the foundation. So every year we do some amendment, we modified it every year. So just imagine, every year we have a debriefing that whatever work good we keep, whatever doesn't work we throw it away. And then we keep adding. So this is like the 15th year that we go mission to. So just imagine, I mean, we learn from mistake, right? So every year we get more, we get better and better and better. So that's how, because keep in mind that the two, for example, after she applies, she move on to her life. We have another group of students coming in. This is a 2-year term. So I have to, they have to have some sort of a guideline, right? So that's what they're based on to continue the legacy.
The way that Lemel is set up, we have a very good system for checking in as well as the feedback. So we can always kind of perpetuate all of the structure and all of the responsibilities from our students that we are expecting. So for Lemel, at least for our offices and interns, we have very high standards of what they need to meet in order for us to kind of carry out our mission. And I think a lot of that was answered by Dr. Rui, as it stems from our founders and 20 or 2007, but also our students, I think we do a very good job of just passing down what we know to the future generations. I think that is something that Memo strives to work on. It's just improvements later down on the line for those who will be succeeding us in the future.
Yeah, what an extraordinary structure that you've all built and have lived in the last few years, because it sounds like if anybody who is looking at college applications, and you know, there's a series of different volunteer organizations, and if I saw Memo, I would probably be thinking to myself, if I knew what the organization was, this is somebody that I would want on my team, right?
Definitely, yeah. So that's why that to answer your question earlier, with food, this is we don't have problem of they questioning, why that we go on mission trip, but they always have question why that my daughter or my son is not selected.
Oh,
So
wow.
we have because we
Reverse
so
problem.
right, it's a reverse problem because we so rigid. We have a process, and even my own friend, even my own relatives. We have to go through the whole process, right?
Now, that all being said, it sounds like it not like it's bulletproof or like you got the system down and you know you interview and you know you have everything smooth sailing. I can't imagine that.
No,
One of the
yeah.
questions I prepared is, what are some of the nightmare scenarios that you have remembered in the last few years? If you could share that with me, the pain points or something that had happened that were pretty bad, that you all recovered from, obviously.
I remember last year I was helping my previous co-executive director, Sam and Jenny, plan the mission trip. And one of my tasks was to assign shadowing roles to all of the students at the Hospital of UMC, so Daehok Iyuk, right? For the second day, we had one of the doctors tell us that there are these certain departments that are not taking shadowing roles anymore the day of. We were in the conference room that morning, and so me and my board of directors, we had to kind of switch around roles for everyone, especially those students who have put their preferred roles as, let's say, like pediatrics, cardiovascular surgery, right? They weren't able to see that day. So there was a lot of disappointment right at that moment when she told us that these departments are not accepting volunteers. But one thing that our board of directors is really good at is being flexible and adaptable. That's kind of our motto for any big planning events like this. There is something that will always come your way. Situations will always arise, but it is with our diligence and our duties to kind of tackle those problems hands-on. So what we did is we pulled out our phones and we kind of reorganized everyone into certain roles that they still have preferred. If not, we allowed them to have their preferred roles the next day. So we kind of split it up into the like half roles for each day. So everyone can still get a chance to shadow and have their preferences. But for our schedule for the day, we also needed to add in like maybe we had to do training that day. We had to quiz our students to have them do something on the later half of the day that they weren't shadowing for. So I think along the way, we do have a lot of things that come, but Memo and especially our advisors, they're always willing to give us advice and guidance on how to tackle these situations.
After many mission trip that I've been this we always have the similar issue that the son or the daughter of the advisors they think they're entitled to be there. They think that because of so the rule is this: if the parents it will volunteer in the mid, so they can automatically bring in the kids. But because of that, I'm still trying to solve that issue. The kid, they still have to go through the training, they still have to go through all that stuff because of they feel like they're entitled, so they skip the training. So because of that, so they because they don't have enough training, so we have to put them crowd control as a position, for example. And then they get upset, and then the parents get upset. The parents come to me. So why you discriminate my daughter or my son from the group? But they don't realize that because they didn't go through the protocol, right? I give you another example. Back in 2012, I brought my daughter. She's a first year of college, and we have a curfew before we go to the mobile clinic. The following day is a long drive. We have to wake up early, 5 o'clock, so everybody had to go to bed by 10:30, 11, and no alcohol in the room. And 11:30, the director, co-director, knocked on my door and said, "Dr. Bui, can I have a word with you?" And I said, "Can you wait until tomorrow?" They said, "No. I'm just gonna let you know that I see your daughter room with the two guys that the memo that bring the beers in the room. So I'm just gonna let you know. So can you talk to your daughter about that?" So even though I kind of shocked that they tell me it just happened to be my daughter, but the thing is, but I kind of glad that happened because that proved to me that they follow the protocol. So I feel safe. So those kind of I never forget those negative things that it happened in the mission trip. But because of that, I feel like they have a protocol to follow, they have a guideline to follow, but a lot of time because of the advisor bring their own kids, so it's hard. They feel like they're entitled to be there. You follow me? So that's a problem that I've been having. So even though we keep saying that you have to go through the training, but I think they do it like maybe 80 or 90%, right? Maybe 90% of it, but not all the way.
So wait, Timothy, how did you deal with your daughter? Did you reprimand
Okay,
her?
so what I did is I came
Can't let
down to
me,
her
dude, I'm not
room.
gonna let you off the hook. I gotta get
Okay,
you down to
so but that's a good example. I went down to the room. I said to her that why do you invite, the curfew, no alcohol after that time? She said, "Dad, I didn't invite them in. They just knocked the door, and then they came in with the beer in their hands, and I get caught." And I said, "Well, just the fact that you invite them in instead of saying, 'No, it's time for me to sleep. I have to be ready early in the morning.' But just the fact that you invite them in and you accept their invitation, that's you're wrong." Okay. So she got a big warning of that. Okay. And then, but of course she might be defensive about it. She said, "No, I didn't do it. They're the one who brought it in." But that's I never forget that. But because of that, and I use that example a lot to my student. So, it's happened to my own daughter, so I know. So that's a lot of time the student think, he's a chief advisor, nobody can touch me, that type of thing. So and I don't want the kid to feel that way just because of their parents are advisors.
Yeah, that sounds like a big challenging issue. I can imagine, as an advisor, you are basically not forcing your kid to go, but you probably begged them to go at some point and really wanted it.
The first one, she curious. The second one, I have no problem. The second one, she want to follow. She really like to go. She going again this year. Okay, but the first one, she's in finance and she want to go to Wall Street, and she work in New York and Wall Street right now. But she after the mission, that's another thing about mission trip. A lot of people think they like healthcare, but after the trip and they go home, they tell me that that's not my cup of tea. Maybe that's your dream, but I don't like it. So a lot of time the mission trip would tell you early that that's not you fit in. So I told the parents, I saying that the parent boomer the numbers are on the and then but that doesn't mean that the kid like it, right? So the mission trip is a time that they can expose themselves to different area of the healthcare now, and then they pick and choose.
Right.
So that's another plus sign of the mission trip.
Now, I want to probably end with this question, which is probably a longer type of question. But how does the team prepare for a mission? Is it 2 months out, 3 months out? How does logistics happen? How does all these supplies get there?
Planning always begins, honestly, and I would say winter quarter is when we start planning. So around November, December, we ask the hospital if we are going to be able to volunteer again this summer, right? We kind of send them that official invitation or an asking them if Mount Royal is welcome to come back. Right. We have so many moving parts that we have to talk to, especially with our clinic. We have the UMC that I have EDU to talk to, as well as the hospital in Vietnam. So we have to speak to our connections there at the hospital. Dr. Bui has to talk to the Saigon Charity Dental Team, his dental team over there that will help out with the dental program. But I would say at least starting in November, at least 6 months in advance.
Wait, so
And starting from there,
you have to ask permission every year?
yes,
yes. Yeah,
yeah, about
why
every
isn't they,
year.
why don't they just sort of acknowledge that year after year this team is coming back and you just start
Oh.
hitting the ground running and saying, hey, if we're coming back every year, this is what we're doing this year differently or the same, right?
No, to answer your question, very easy. It's not the same people that going back every year. Number one, every 2 years you have a change of student body. A lot of students, by the way, I am proud to say that most students that in Memo, they're very ambitious. They go on with Ivy League medical school. They go to the co-director before their medical school or pharmacy or dental school. They very so in other words, they're not staying there every year. Or maybe two. How many years are you're involved in that? Is that 2.5 or 3 years?
For board of director, this is my second year, but for a memo, I've been involved since 2019, so my
Okay.
fifth year.
Okay, 5 years. So when that what are you sophomore or freshman at that time?
That's when I was a sophomore.
A sophomore. Okay. So anyway, and then the doctors can, so you understand, not the same doctors that go back. Okay, because this is a freebie, right? So all the doctors, physician doctors, they have to close down their office, that no income, right? So it's not simple like you can ask the same doctor to keep coming back every year. Okay, so it's a lot of sacrifice in their part, right? So because of that, we have a different people, different student name, different doctors. So they go through the they call a legalization process. They want to make sure that they are legit doctors that are able to do those kind of work. And then they want to protect their people as well. And then the student, how many people, so they need to know every little things, okay, when we there. That's the reason why.
Got it.
Yeah. So after we kind of get that sit down meeting with everyone to reconfirm the dates, the timeline that Memo is going back to Vietnam and when we are hosting our mobile clinic, then we start doing the paperwork for all of the doctor's licenses and registrations, as well as all of the passport and all the resumes for the students too, because they want to see that everyone is reputable and says that they have the license and are able to practice. So after that, we also plan, or simultaneously, we are also planning our gala, which is where we fundraise for all of the heart surgeries we provide, all of the scholarships, and all of the orphanage donations. We fundraise during our gala. So simultaneously preparing for the mission trip, we are also prepping for our gala to have the funds for all of our mission programs on the mission trip. And I just want to use this space to say that all of BAML's funds are going towards our mission programs. Students and all of the providers have to pay out of pocket to go on the mission trip. Everything we fundraise during BAML events is going towards the communities we help. And then after that, we have all of the trainings the students must go through, whether it be medical training, whether it be dental training. I know last year we had cultural and like Vietnamese terminology and like emergency situation trainings, right, from the doctors. So we also host those types of trainings, as well as kind of have a packing day for our students. So we pack all the necessary medical supplies we are bringing to Vietnam. But from all of this, like touching upon what you said about the donation, our board of directors and all of our officers, throughout the year, we actually apply for grants and donation requests for medical supplies. So anything that we see that they are offering to give us, we apply for those grants. And we work towards finding those funds and donations for our mission trip. So I would say at least 6 months in advance of planning.
I mean, those students, not only they academically, they have to be responsible with a good grade because they apply to a good school, to a healthcare school, they need a good grade. But not only that, they have to organize this. And on top of that, you will see that during the gala, I want to showcase them. They a lot of we don't have a professional entertainer. The student will entertain. So you'll be surprised how talented they are. So when you watch the gala and when you're there, you realize that it's, oh my God, this is a student run, and you'll be amazed what they can do.
Thank you both so much for such a comprehensive conversation about this organization memo. I am both relieved that there is people out there like you both and the rest of your team. I'm relieved that Vietnam gets to see this sort of level of charity. I'm both relieved and it both warms my heart to know that the level of goodness is being reverberated not just in Vietnam, but it there you guys are leading by examples in the structure that you guys have created.
Yeah, and especially to the younger generation.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you both for living the life that living the life of high service to both the Vietnamese community in Vietnam and here in the US.
Well, thank you for your time, and you asked a very good question. Very good question. Yeah, I think those are the questions that the audience want to hear.
Yes.
They want to understand. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Timothy. Thank you
Thank
to
you.
yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking time out of your day to meet with us and allowing us to kind of occupy this space and talk about these questions. I know a lot of people, they don't have like these firsthand like experience with Memo, and they're kind of curious about the ins and outs. So hopefully we were able to provide with some insight and details onto what is going behind the scenes of all of our big events.
Yeah, and I hope this is a piece, this conversation is also a piece that you can use when people have questions about your organization and they want to know more about it. This is very comprehensive understanding of what you are all doing.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Christo Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.